From our studios in Cuenca, Spain, I'm Kate Jetmore with Listen. Our interview today marks the end of our series focusing on language. How does our culture affect how we communicate with one another? What effect does our background have on how we listen? Wherever we're from, our beginnings have more to do with the present than we often acknowledge. Today I'm joined by Lidia Muñoz Solera. Born in Cuenca, Spain, Lidia decided to leave her hometown when she turned 18. She earned a degree in translation and interpretation at the University of Salamanca, then moved to Heidelberg, Germany, where she began a master's degree in conference interpretation. Today, she's based in Burgos, Spain, where she works as a German teacher. Welcome, Lidia. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
As we mentioned in the introduction, you are Spanish and you grew up here in Cuenca. I would say that more often than not, people from this town don't ever end up moving away, and yet you did. Talk us through that a little bit. How and when did you decide you wanted to explore other parts of the world, and how much did that have to do with language?
Well, this desire to explore the world has always been a part of me since I can remember. As a child, I was sort of a quiet child, and that is not very common here in Spain. Here in Spain, if you want to be listened to, you have to be loud. So when I was growing up, I felt like this invisibility covering me. Like, I was always the quiet kid at the table in family gatherings and so on. But that doesn't mean that I didn't have an intensive life experience. I have this very strong inner life. Mm-hmm. I loved to read, I loved to listen to music, and I spent a lot of time alone. But it wasn't loneliness, it was like solitude. I mm-hmm. really enjoyed spending this time alone. And most of the time I would be, like I said, reading or listening to music. And I really enjoyed listening to music in English. Uh-huh. And I also loved to watch TV series in English. And this desire to know more or to speak more in English was like intensified when you came to the family. I don't know if I've told you about this. I think
well, we
I
should also share with our listeners, those who don't know, that we are part of the same family. I'm exactly. married into your family and you are my niece.
Exactly. So when you arrived to the family, I remember that you didn't speak very well Spanish. Mm-hmm. And I was doing really good at English at school, so I felt like I could kind of help you to communicate with the family, because there was this culture shock or language shock as mm-hmm. well.
There was a bit of a gap there, wasn't
exactly.
there?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I had the possibility, like from a kid's point of view, to like pull two worlds together, like your world and my family's world. Mm. And that's when I began to feel like a strong need to really improve my English, but this time with a goal, which was to pull the world a little bit together.
And wow, were you aware of that as a child, or is that an awareness that's come with time?
This is something that I've realized later on. Mm. But I remember that it was very important to me to feel that I could help someone. And I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but it was like Christmas time, I think. And we were talking, and it was like a very simple conversation. Like, there were pictures of things that had to do with Christmas, like the Christmas tree and the star and so on. And we were like pointing at the different pictures, and you were like, "That's a tree," and I would be like, "That's an árbol."
Really?
"That's a star," and I would say, "That's a estrella," and that was the beginning of something that has marked my life.
I don't remember that moment. I love that is one of your memories from your childhood. I love that.
Yeah, it's nice.
And you sort of never know what what things you're going to do or say in your life that will stick in someone else's memory. Yeah. That's such a an important thing to remember. Yeah. Mm,
that's powerful.
Wow. So that was still when you were pretty young. Mm. Take us up to the time when you decided to leave Cuenca. How did that come about?
Like I said before, ever since I can remember, I wanted to leave and get to know other parts of the world. And then when I turned 18, I had the possibility to study in another city. And I have always been in love with this city called Salamanca, which is kind of in the north of Spain. Mm-hmm. And there you could study translation and interpreting.
Mm-hmm. Is that why you felt so attracted to Salamanca, or was there something else about the city that you loved?
There was something about the city, the architecture. It is also a student city, so there are a lot of students there, and the life is very active. There is a lot of culture, so that is something that has always drawn me to Salamanca.
And tell us when the university was founded. It's a very old
university. It's a very old university. We are celebrating now the 800th anniversary of the University of Salamanca. It's the oldest university in Spain nowadays.
Okay. And one of the oldest in Europe, I think.
I think so too. Yeah.
So how did it feel when you, I know you had this goal to study in Salamanca. Mm. You were accepted into the program. It's a very competitive program.
Exactly. I had to, in Spain, when you finish high school, you take a test, like a very important exam, and based on the grade you get on this test, you are accepted to different degrees and you are rejected from others. But here in Salamanca, you had to take an extra test, where you had to express yourself in English and in Spanish correctly in order to be accepted.
And was that also in writing or
in writing orally? And also orally. I mean, if you pass the written exam, you had an interview in English, and if you did that good enough, you passed, and then you got accepted. So it's something very competitive.
So you take this very, very demanding exam at the end of high school as a Spanish student. Every Spanish student does this when they're finishing high school. And based on the score of that exam, you can choose what you want to study. So the sort of most, the least desirable degrees sort of come, they are still available for people who've gotten a lower score.
Exactly.
Right? So the most desirable degrees are taken by the people who've gotten the top scores. You wanted to go to Salamanca. So based on your score, you had the option to take this extra oral, written and then oral exam.
Exactly.
And you got in.
Yeah.
What was it like when you arrived there?
It was amazing because, I don't know, it felt, when I was living in Cuenca, I kind of felt like a weird child because of my interest in languages and because I was quiet and so. But when I arrived to Salamanca and I got accepted in this degree, I saw a bunch of people that were also freaks, so to speak, in their hometowns. And then, and suddenly we were all together in this magical city and this great college, and it was a magical time for
you
me.
You found
for
your
all
tribe.
Exactly. It was great for all of us, and it was like an awakening for me. Yeah.
So it sounds like it was what you had hoped for. Is that right?
It was definitely, and it was even more to me than I could imagine, because academically I knew it was going to be something awesome. But then on the personal level, in Cuenca, I never had such a great social agenda or a great social life. But then I arrived to Salamanca and I met these great people who also had this interest in languages and in traveling and so on. And suddenly I had a bunch of great friends. I was invited to great parties. We were traveling all the way through Spain. So, and that was something that I could have never imagined, living in Cuenca. Living in Cuenca, I thought that I was someone just who wasn't like a lone. I thought that I was like a lonely wolf, a loner, a person who just spends time alone.
Right. And it was because you just hadn't met your people yet.
Exactly.
Oh, that is really hopeful.
It was magical. So it's like This is a message that I have always wanted to send to people who have trouble during high school or in their childhood, that there is hope.
Have you ever heard about this campaign in the United States called It Gets Better?
Yeah, against bullying.
Oh, it sounds like maybe they should hire you for the It Gets Better
campaign. Please do.
You can, open. You can handle the Spanish language, It Gets Better.
Todo mejora.
Exactly. So I know maybe in your third year of university, correct me if I'm wrong, you went abroad. Is that right?
I did.
So tell us about that a little bit.
I took this exchange scholarship that is called Erasmus. The Erasmus program is a program that covers all countries that take part in the European Union. And it is like a partnership between two universities. There is your university at home, like my university in Salamanca. And there is the university abroad that is working with your home university. So,
and this is a whole network throughout Europe.
Exactly.
In all European Union countries.
Okay. This is very common. Many students in Europe take this program.
Okay.
So,
do you have to apply for it, or can you automatically be part of it?
You have to apply to
Okay.
And you have to be also, you also have to be selected, but it's really easy to be selected.
Okay.
I mean, there's place for everyone.
Okay. Okay.
So there's the home university, in my case Salamanca, and there is the university abroad. In my case, my university was in Germany, in the south, in this city called Heidelberg. And the two universities work together. The home university sends you with the courses that you have to take that year.
In or accordance with what you're studying.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then when you arrive, you have a teacher who assesses you and who shows you the courses that are available in the university abroad.
Now, are you studying in the native language of the country where you go? Or is it always in English? Or how does that work?
Sometimes, well, in my case, because I studied translation, you are expected to know the language.
Okay.
So all the courses I took were given in German.
Okay. And that's what you were looking for.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That was perfect for me. But there are other students. I met students from Italy or from Portugal that were studying, I don't know, social sciences or mathematics. And they didn't speak German. So for them, there were courses in English that they could take. So knowledge of English was enough.
Okay. And is part of the application process taking a language assessment? I mean, to make sure that your English level is sufficient, or in your case, your German level, I guess.
In my case, it was a given. Like, people would assume that you speak correct English and German.
Okay.
But in the case of other careers or other degrees, you had to prove that you spoke at least English. You have to speak like at least an intermediate level of English.
Okay.
If you don't, then you can't leave.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, if you don't, you have a major problem,
exactly.
Don't you? So would you like to share anything with us about your Erasmus experience? How long were you there?
I was in Germany for 5 months.
Okay.
Then I stayed an extra month because I was feeling so at home there that I decided to prolong it a little more.
What was that about, feeling at home? Was that the people, the university? Was it Germany? Was it German?
It was everything. Like, I really enjoy the process of learning a language. So when I was there, I saw that my level of German was improving very, very quickly. And especially at the end, I met this German guy whom I fell in love with. Like, the oldest story.
Well, they also say that's key in learning a foreign language.
Yeah. And I met him like 4 days before having to return to Spain. And I felt like this strong urge to stay, get to know him a little bit more, and also it was like the perfect opportunity to surround myself with German people because of all my international friends were returning home. So I would have to stay and force myself to be surrounded by Germans.
And did you? Is that what you did?
I did, and that in that month I learned a lot. It was like
the most... Tell us about that. I mean, how did you grow? How did that extra month change you?
It's hard to explain with words. Also, being in a relationship with someone that doesn't speak your mother tongue, it was strange at first, but then it was also very enriching. Mm. We spoke in his mother tongue, in German, and for me, it was amazing. The most trouble that I had was when we were together with his friends, and they would speak in German like really, really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And also there was a lot of slang involved, and that's when I had most trouble. That was a humbling experience as mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. And that's when I learned the most.
Would you say, I'm just going to ask you this based on my own experience. Would you say it was a humbling experience because you didn't feel like the Lydia who was at the table with that big group of German friends was the Lydia who you feel you really are? Like it was a different version of you.
Mm.
Is that how you felt, or was it something else that you felt?
Well, this is a tricky question because I'm not really sure how the real Lydia is.
Good question, right?
I don't know if this makes sense to anyone, but I feel like I'm this version of myself one day and this version of myself the next day. I don't
mm-hmm,
know.
Mm-hmm.
It was humbling in the sense that everyone at my university would tell me, your German is so good, you're excellent at this. And there came a point where I actually believed it. But then when I surrounded myself by actual German people, I saw that I still had a lot to learn. So that was the humbling part. And yeah, it was also hard to have an opinion or something in my head that I wanted to say and not finding the words to say it. It's also really frustrating.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when I first moved to Spain, I was very lucky because I was working at a language school and I met another American woman there. We became very good friends. We're still friends to this day. But she had already had an experience of living abroad in France, in her case, and learning another language and sort of going through the process that I went through, the process you're describing. And I remember one day we were sitting having coffee or something, and she said, your Spanish is really improving. She said, I think in about 2 years, you're going to be really happy with your level. And I thought, 2 years? 2 years? I almost started crying. Now, I've been here 18 years. My Spanish obviously is a lot better than it was then, but there's still holes in my Spanish. There still are moments when I have to say, wait, what? You know? And like you said, at a table with a bunch of people talking, you know, in their own, especially, you know, with our family, with our extended family, it's like, you know, people refer to things that were on TV in the 70s that I never even heard of. And it's like, what are you guys talking about? You know?
Yeah.
So that was when you were a junior in college. Then you came back to Salamanca and finished university. What was the next step for you?
Well, the next step was graduating.
Mm-hmm.
So I finished the last year at Salamanca. It felt weird to be back home. I mean, the first time you return home from abroad, it's quite a shock. Like, people speak your language in the streets. You have to be careful with what you say because people actually understand you. I got used to saying on the street, look at that woman, what is she wearing? Like, that's crazy. And suddenly you can't do that in the street anymore.
It's not your secret language anymore.
People understand you. But I survived that part, and I actually ended up graduating. But my head was still back in Germany. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go back, so I started to prepare for my master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to study conference interpreting. We can go deeper into that.
Yeah,
later.
I'd love to talk about it. Because your undergraduate degree was in translation and interpretation.
Exactly.
So actually, let's go there now. Can you tell us, first of all, what's the difference between translation and interpretation? Because sometimes people get those terms mixed up.
Hmm. So when you translate, you receive a text in, let's say, English, and you try to convey the meaning of that text in Spanish. But the keyword here is text.
Yeah, it's written.
Exactly. Okay. You are working with the written word.
Mm-hmm.
When you are interpreting, you listen to a speech in a certain language, for example, English, and you repeat the same speech in your target language. In my case, it's Spanish.
Okay.
And it's also important to say there are two modes of interpreting.
Mm-hmm.
There is consecutive interpreting, so you listen to a speech of 5, 6, 7 minutes. Then there is a pause, and then you repeat the same speech. You have taken notes, obviously.
Okay, okay.
And you repeat the message, you repeat the speech in your target language, in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And then the tricky part is simultaneous interpreting, which is you're listening to a speech in English, and at the same time you're speaking in Spanish and you are saying the same thing. So you are translating life, so to speak.
Wow. Can you describe what that looks like? Because I know some people have probably seen this, maybe if they're watching the UN Assembly, or you know, some of our listeners will have been in a conference where they've worn headphones, for example. So can you kind of describe what it looks like?
Sure. So simultaneous interpretation takes place normally at international conferences, like
mm-hmm.
you said.
Mm-hmm.
And the interpreters always work in pairs, and they sit in a cabin that is normally at the end of the auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
And there they have a
microphone. It's like a soundproof booth,
mm-hmm,
right?
Exactly.
At the very back.
It's a booth.
Mm-hmm.
So you sit there with your partner and you wear headphones and you have a microphone in front of you. And you, through the headphones, you're listening to what the main speaker is saying on the floor. And then you are automatically translating into your mother tongue. Normally it's into your mother tongue.
Mm-hmm.
There are some cases where it can be different, but normally it's in your mother tongue. And then the audience that doesn't speak the language on the floor is mm-hmm. listening to your translation.
In the moment, right?
In the moment.
Wow.
So it's pretty amazing.
How do you learn to do that? What's the process of training to be a simultaneous interpreter?
It's a long process, and it's a difficult process as well. So for simultaneous interpreting, what you do is you listen to a discourse or a speech in your mother tongue, in my case in Spanish, and you repeat what you are listening to so that your brain gets used to working at two different paces. So half of your brain is listening and half of your brain is producing.
But at this point, still all in your mother tongue.
Exactly.
You're listening to something and repeating what you're hearing in the same language.
In the same language.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the key.
Mm-hmm.
Because you feel kind of comfortable in that place. And normally you do it in your mother tongue.
Mm-hmm.
So that you don't get mixed up with the languages.
Mm-hmm. And because that's the language that supposedly everyone feels most comfortable
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then the next step is you listen to, once you have mastered this.
Okay. Is it hard?
It's really hard.
Really?
And confusing.
Yeah. It doesn't really sound that hard. I mean, considering like where you're going, like mm-hmm. ultimately you're going to be dealing with a couple different languages, and you know, there's a lot of time pressure, and if you're employed as a simultaneous interpreter, obviously there's a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But even this first step is really difficult, you're saying?
It's really difficult. I even invite our listeners to try it at home.
Mm-hmm.
You only need a video on YouTube or whatever, and
mm-hmm.
try to repeat with headphones on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one headphone is in your ear and the other ear must be free.
Okay.
To listen to yourself.
Oh, okay.
You have to listen to yourself.
Okay.
And then it's also really helpful to record what you're saying. So have a recorder or something there, or even your cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can listen to yourself talking. Normally, your voice sounds kind of funny because you're so focused on the task of repeating that you're not paying attention to your voice.
Mm.
So it's funny and also frustrating sometimes. But it's interesting. I would recommend it.
And what's the next step? Where do you go from there?
In the next step, you are still working only with Spanish in my case. So you are listening to a speech in Spanish and you try to repeat or convey the same meaning, the same message with different words.
Okay.
So here the key is to understand what you're listening and reformulate.
Okay.
And say the same thing with different words. This is also really good to improve your vocabulary.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then the next step is to work with both languages. So cold turkey.
So when you make that next leap mm-hmm. from only your mother tongue, you know, reception and production only in your mother tongue, mm-hmm. when you make that leap to receiving the message in a different language and then producing it in your mother tongue, that to me, I'm not a simultaneous interpreter, but to me that sounds like it's the hardest step. Is it really the hardest step?
It is the hardest step. It is something that is really difficult to explain if you have never tried. Mm-hmm. And also, so it happens that you have the feeling that you did it really well. And then you listen to the recording and you find that you can't even pronounce words properly in your mother tongue. Or that you skipped a complete sentence, mm-hmm. or that you are not making any sense. Mm-hmm. It's a long process, and the key is to be patient.
You know, I saw you about ready to say the word patient, and I just assumed you were going to say present.
Also.
Because it sounds almost like a meditation, like you have to be in the moment, in the moment, in the moment, in the moment, and that you have to be so in the moment that you probably have no idea what actually happened until it's over. Is that what it's like?
Sometimes it is. If you are able to enter this state of flow, our teachers would call it state of flow at the university. Once you're finished, you can't remember what you said. But you know, once you've practiced enough, you have trust that you did it properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is a sort of performance, isn't it? And with any sort of performance, you have to trust it. Because if you don't, I mean, that's not going to help, right? If you just sit there and worry about it.
Exactly. The key is to trust and just to, like, jump.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you a couple questions about Germany, about living in Germany. You lived there as an undergraduate when you did the Erasmus program. You went back to Heidelberg to work on your master's. I'd love to hear your impressions of living in Germany as a Spaniard. I'd love to hear what the things were that you missed about Spain while you were living in Germany. And then when you came back to Spain, what are the things, because now you live in Spain, what are the things that you miss about Germany?
So when I left for Germany, most people here in Spain would say that Germans were cold people, that it is hard to be acquainted or even a friend of a German person. And I tried to be open-minded when I arrived there, but the truth is that Germans are cold.
And so it was hard to meet people.
It was really hard to meet people. And nowadays, currently, I only have one German friend. Mm-hmm. She's great. She's awesome. But it is also true that she isn't 100% German. Her parents come from Iran. Mm. And even though she was born and raised in Germany, you can see that she's an open-minded person. She's really warm. Mm. She's also lived in Spain for a year or so. Mm-hmm. But people born and raised in Germany that are 100% Germans are hard to be friendly with.
Do you think that it's like that for Germans? Like, do you think part of the reason that it was hard for you to meet Germans is because you're Spanish? Or is that sort of the way it is amongst Germans as well?
I don't think it had anything to do with me as a Spanish girl. Mm-hmm. Actually, it also gave me like a free pass. I could meet a lot of people, and because I was from Spain, people were more open to meeting me or to speaking to me. Mm-hmm. But I think it's something that has to do with the personality of the German people itself. Mm-hmm. It's hard for them to get close to other people. Mm-hmm. It is also true that once you have a German friend, you have a German friend forever. Mm-hmm. So they're very truthful and very... they will always be your friend, and they will be there for anything that you need. Mm-hmm. So that's something good to say about them.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it's maybe hard to take those initial steps, but then once you're in, you're in.
You're in. Mm-hmm. You're 100% in. And German people are also very mindful. So they're always in the present moment. When you are talking to some, when you're in a group and talking to each other, everyone is there 100%.
So they're good listeners,
exactly.
Would you say?
And no one is checking their phones or checking who got into the bar at the moment. They are there with you 100%. So you feel listened to and you also feel included in the conversation.
And what about Spain? What did you miss about Spain while you were in Germany?
What I missed about Spain was the ability to be spontaneous. German people are not spontaneous.
They're planners, aren't they?
They're planners. So if you want to go for drinks, they would pull out their agenda from their purse and they would say, how about Friday at 5 o'clock? How does that work for you? It doesn't work like here in Spain. Here in Spain, when you are done with classes, you can say, hey, how about a beer now? And people would go for it and go to a bar or something to have a drink or to organize a picnic right in the spur of the moment. In Germany, it doesn't work that way. So that's what I missed most about Spain, the spontaneity. Thank you.
Well, as we know, you did move back to Spain and you've now settled, at least for the moment, in Burgos, which is in the north of Spain.
Yeah.
You're teaching German. Would you say this is sort of the chapter for the moment, or would you say you're putting down roots in Burgos and this is sort of the end of a series of adventures? Where are you on the path, on the spectrum?
Well, I'm 24 right now, so I hope this is not the end of the adventure. I still have a lot to live. I'm just taking a breath in Burgos. Like the moment right now, I'm at a very comfortable moment. Like Burgos for me, it's like this cozy place where I have friends, a job, where I am also now studying another master's.
Mm-hmm. What are you studying?
Audiovisual translation, like subtitles, translating films, dubbing, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'm living now in a bubble, like a really cozy bubble, but this is not the end. I mean, as soon as I'm finished with my master's and as soon as my friends move from Burgos, because they are also citizens of the world, mm-hmm. they have this desire to move. Some of them have moved already.
Are your friends in Burgos Spaniards?
Not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
We have, in the group, we have two girls from Argentina, mm-hmm. one guy from Britain, and then there's a couple of Spaniards,
mm-hmm.
and one of them recently moved to Poland.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's a quite international group.
Why Poland? Why did your friend move to Poland?
He got into an internship.
Okay.
He's a photographer,
mm-hmm.
and he's working with, I don't know, some company that is specialized in photography
mm-hmm.
in Poland. So, yeah, that's nice. But like I said, this is not the end.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. Lately, I have been thinking about learning Basque, the language
Oh, really?
Spoken in the Basque country, because recently I visited the Basque country and I really enjoyed it there. I mean, I really enjoyed the lifestyle, the people, everything. And I have been thinking about learning Basque and moving to the Basque country in a couple years. I don't know. We'll see.
So, wow, that really interests me for a couple of reasons. One is you wouldn't need to speak Basque in order to live in the Basque country,
no.
right? Everyone speaks Spanish, right?
Yeah, everyone.
So would that just be on like a personal linguistic level that you would want to learn Basque? Or is it more sort of wanting to work in the public system where maybe they require a knowledge of Basque?
I haven't figured out that part yet.
Mm-hmm.
The Basque language is a language that has always interested me because it has survived over centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe I could work as a translator in the Basque country. Many people don't know this, but in Spain we have four official languages.
Mm-hmm.
We have Castilian, which is Spanish, mm-hmm. Galician, Basque, and then Catalonian?
Catalonian or Catalan? I think it's Catalan, yeah. What about Valencian? Is that not an official language?
I think that's it's not an official language.
Okay, it's not recognized.
Some people are angry at that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
so
another conversation.
I don't want to go deep into that.
The Basque language is a bit of an anomaly, isn't it? I mean, no one sort of knows what its roots are. It's not really related to any other language, is it?
It isn't. It's like an isolated language in the north of Spain, surrounded by mountains. It fascinates me.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
That's a really interesting new goal.
We'll see.
I wish you luck in that. Lydia, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I really enjoyed our conversation. I hope you can come back again soon.
Sure. Anytime.
This completes our series on language. Many thanks to all of our guests for their generous contributions. We love your feedback. Let us know which episodes you're enjoying most and what you hope to hear in the future. Subscribe to our podcast if you haven't already. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and be sure to recommend us to your friends and colleagues. Listen is sponsored by RAF. Cutting-edge cuisine in a traditional setting. For a look at the RAF dining experience, visit www.rafsanpedro.es. That's www.rafsanpedro.es. The producers of Listen are Lauren Lovett and Laura Muñoz Solera. Our technical director and engineer is Iñaki Martinez, with original music by Lucas Muñoz Jetmore. I'm Kate Jetmore, and this is Listen.